discussing national and international issues. This is The David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello and welcome to The David Curtin Show. I'm here till 11 o'clock this morning, an hour of looking at the truth in news that you won't get on the mainstream media. But you'll know better than that. You're here with me on today's News Talk TNT. Now, we've got some great guests coming up in the show. We're going to look at an agreement, secret agreements, which have been put in place between the UK and Israel, and looking at how much they have influenced the government's position on the atrocities that are happening in Gaza at the moment. And we also have an expert on 5G. Nicholas Martin will be here with us in the second half of the show to look at that, which is a big area of concern for lots of people. If you want to get involved in the show and call in, though, here are the numbers to call.
This is the way we're going to be heard.
From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All across the country, our heritage is under threat as historic buildings are being left to be run down by councils that take control of them, leave them to get dilapidated, and then say they need to be demolished. No exception to that is something that's come to my attention recently of a beautiful historic building in the Scottish Borders called Lowood House. Now, this sits on the southern bank of the River Tweed near Tweedbank and Galashiels. It was built by the last king's architect and surveyor for Scotland in 1829. His name was Robert Reed. So it was built by a notable historical architect, and it is of noted heritage and historical value. It was bought later on by Constance Crum Ewing in 1949. Her family moved in, her son took it over, and sadly he died in 2019. Now, just before he died in 2018, the local council purchased the house and the land all around it, Lowood House. And what that was thought to have been paid for that house was £10 million for Lowood House and the grounds. And it's also reported that the reason that they did that was because they wanted to convert it into social housing units. So I don't know all the ins and outs of the individual people on the council, but certainly at the moment, there is now a plan which has been published that they want to demolish this historic Lowood House, which would cost them £440,000 to do. But they're saying they need to do it because it's been run down and it's been dilapidated, and they need to provide social housing for people in the area. Not that there are that many people in the Scottish Borders, I imagine, who are local, who need social housing in the grounds of an old historic stately home. Now, the Architectural Heritage Society of Scotland has got involved in this, and they are campaigning against the demolition of this house. They released a statement just recently that said they urge Scottish Borders councillors to postpone making any decision on the future of Lowood House pending the preparation of a conservation plan and exploration of other options. Lowood House is presently a local asset, presumably worth at least £1 million, even without its wider estate. And to spend £440,000 destroying a £1 million asset seems a significant waste of taxpayers' resources. This is exactly the kind of place large groups of tourists seek to rent by the week. So if the report does not mention using it as a single occupancy accommodation, it is a serious omission from the research. It seems that Scottish Borders Council are hell-bent on going ahead and destroying this historic house without any other thought or consultation. They have to do a consultation, but as we know from looking at previous examples of consultations, the people that hold them then obviously sometimes just ignore the results of any consultation and just go ahead with the plans they have anyway. There are lots of questions to ask about this. Why did the local council step in and get involved in purchasing a property which was such so large and of such historic value in the first place? Surely it would have been better to leave it to be sold on the free market to a hotel chain or some community group that could take it and use it for educational purposes, or another private family who might want to take it over and live in it themselves. Why did the council get involved in this and then leave it to go dilapidated and then say, well, now we need to knock it down? But this is not just a unique situation in the Scottish Borders. I know of many cases around the country where similar things are happening to individual historic buildings. And if you just think, well, this is one building, it doesn't matter, this is happening everywhere. There are 317 councils in England, 32 in Scotland, 22 in Wales, and 11 in Northern Ireland. And most of them are doing similar things. They're buying up old buildings, and then they have plans to just leave them to get derelict, and then they'll knock them down, either because they say they're unsafe, or they say, well, these old buildings don't meet new climate regulations, we need to knock them down and build some horrible 4 or 5 story carbuncle of smart pod housing units for people to be depressed in, and then they will meet the climate targets that they say that they need to adhere to. This is the wholesale destruction, or the piecemeal and wholesale destruction of our heritage, bit by bit by bit, so that we don't realize it's happening until it's all gone. There's still enough around at the moment for us not to be alarmed too much. But I am alarmed because I see this happening in increasing measure. Obviously, I'm the leader of the Heritage Party, and our councillors on parish and town councils and our activists and candidates at local level are seeing a growing number of these kind of cases and are actively trying to save some historic buildings, notably some in Devon that I know about. What we need to do is push back on this by making a huge stink in the media. If you live in Scottish Borders, please write to your Scottish Borders councillors and tell them that they're doing the wrong thing and they shouldn't be knocking down a historic house. And I'll just leave you with a thought, which is a quite strange thought. The leader and the largest group in the Scottish Borders Council is actually the Conservative group. But the Conservative group are not conserving our history and our heritage. I've for many years called them the fake Conservatives because they're not actually conserving anything. If they want to live up to their name, they should be doing the exact opposite of what they are doing, not destroying our heritage, but looking after it. They're not going to do that. So please get involved in local politics yourself. Stand to be a councillor, take over these positions of power, and then we can save our history and our heritage. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma Cooper is with me on today's News Talk to talk about the latest in the UK, what's going on in the headlines. Gemma, what stories have you found out that are happening today?
Well, there's a big story in northeast London, a big police incident outside a tube station, reports of a man wielding a sword, which are the footage of this has gone viral all across social media. It looks like a machete of some kind. Police have arrested a 36-year-old man. There's been a lot of commotion there this morning. Lots of residents saying they woke up to piercing screams and shouting, all kinds of things. That is a breaking story. I've got more detail on that. Also, asylum is in the headlines again, with most of the asylum seekers that have been identified as the first cohort to be sent to Rwanda, now that the government's Rwanda bill is made law, can't be found. Half of them can't be found, the Home Office has admitted. The government is saying, no, we kind of know where they are. 5,700 have been earmarked for deportation, and only just over 2,000 that people know where they are, officials know where they are. So a bit of an embarrassment for the government, who are jumping up and down last week about this Rwanda bill. Lots of people still to be accounted for. Many saying they've gone over to Ireland and into the Republic of Ireland, where immigration is a massive issue, to escape being put on a plane and deported into the Central African country. And of course, the hunt is still on now to find the next leader of Scotland. The Scottish National Party yesterday in disarray after Humza Yousaf's resignation. Who will succeed him is the question on everyone's lips this morning here in the UK. Who wants the job, I think, is another question that people are asking themselves. So they're just a few of the headlines doing the rounds here in the UK, here on TNT.
Well, what you mentioned first about London, it seems that this is something that happens almost every day. Another stabbing, another violent incident, someone running amok in a public place, this time with a sword. I mean, how on earth can someone get hold of a sword in this country and then just go on the riot in the streets? It's beyond me. I mean, is there any information about who this person is and where he got hold of this weapon?
All police are saying at the moment is they will confirm they have arrested a 36-year-old man. Footage that's gone absolutely viral, and it is shocking footage. I don't know if you've had time to see it. He's wielding a sword that does look like a machete. It looks like that. It's a very large sword. Residents in the area, which is a residential area, it's not central London, it's outside of the central area, said that 7 o'clock this morning they were woken, apparently, allegedly, a car had driven into a house, piercing screams, two police officers and a civilian attacked. Somebody was lying in a pool of blood. That was chaos. The noise of the screams, people said, residents said, were absolutely appalling and shocking for what is quite a quiet residential area. Police and emergency services are at Hainault in East London, and the man who was holding a sword has been arrested. There's not a lot else we can really say apart from what we know, that reports of a vehicle being driven into a house in Thurlow Gardens, again, quite a quiet residential area. And at the time, they say that they understand the Metropolitan Police say the suspect went on to attack other members of the public and two police officers. We're still awaiting a condition check on those that were attacked with this very significantly large blade, I have to say. But this has echoes of a story that we've covered here on TNT, which is the zombie knives that are epidemic, not just in the capital, but in the UK. And there was a kind of zombie knife amnesty a while ago, where police were like, if you hand in these big blades, we'll turn a blind eye, just in an attempt to reduce what is now becoming the violent scourge of UK society. Of course, we don't have a gun crime problem here in the UK. Guns are illegal. We have knife crime. That's our version of it. And when you see images like this, somebody wielding a huge machete-like sword, in one way, it's almost more shocking. I'm not saying gun crime is any less shocking, but when you see the footage, it really does. It's very, very emotive and very, very shocking and frightening. Frightening. Imagine if you wake up ready to go to work, 7 o'clock UK time on a Tuesday morning, and suddenly this. Whether or not it's something personal, a vendetta, they say the car was driven into a building. Did somebody have a grudge against the person who lived in that house? Or is this somebody who's just out of control? These are facts that we don't know. But certainly knife crime is one of the issues that Sadiq Khan, who's up for election this week, has campaigned on. He's campaigned on it, hasn't he? He said he's brought knife crime down in the capital. And it's well known he manipulated certain figures to prove that fact. It wasn't quite true. We've covered that story on TNT before. So shocking scenes in parts of London today. Man has been arrested, though. No charges brought just yet. Maybe we'll have more update on this story tomorrow, David.
I haven't seen the video. I must admit, I'm going to look at that straight after the show. It reminds me of an incident that happened in Croydon a few years ago, a couple of years ago, with someone sort of walking around with a big machete through cars, banging on a car window with a machete. I saw that. But, you know, this is the Hainault you mentioned, which is not a crime-ridden area. It's a nice, leafy suburb. I guess there's people who work there who have quite good jobs, maybe commute into the city or, you know, stay at home and do business at home and things like that. So it's not a bad area. It's not an area that's considered traditionally full of crime like other places. You know, maybe Lewisham or maybe Hackney or so on. This is right out in the edges of London near Essex. So I mean, this is a shock because it's spreading out and it's all over London, and you know, in some cases it's spreading out into the counties as well. Obviously with county lines. And you know, I mean, I have to say, I do suspect that this is related to mass immigration, because as more people come across the channel who are not vetted in any way, and a lot of them end up in gangs or they end up working in the black economy, there is really no check on the crime of people coming across. So, you know, I wonder what they actually will say about the identity of the person. Johnny Dollar has written in and says, if this man was white, they would have announced it immediately as another far right person, but they have held the visual identity, haven't they? Yeah, again, you know, maybe I'm jumping to conclusions as well, but you know, we will see what happens, you know, what the ethnic identity of this person is. We shall see. Ellen has also written in, commenting on what I said originally about Lowood House being earmarked for demolition by the local council in the Scottish Borders. Eleanor says, it is happening in France and other countries around Europe in order to remove history. It's happened in Russia and China, where the majority of historic buildings were demolished or whitewashed due to distort history. And now with the introduction of totalitarianism in the West, we are seeing similar events everywhere. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, to look at what's in China. I mean, you go to some cities there and there's nothing but new buildings. You know, there's really nothing much of history apart from in a few isolated places, the Great Wall of China and so on. You look around in Russia. I mean, Moscow is a very new city. I mean, St. Petersburg still has a lot of history, a lot of beauty there, but in some places, yeah, a lot of the history was ruined by the Bolsheviks, who weren't Russian, but that's a whole other story, a discussion to have. But there we go. Gemma, thank you so much for bringing the stories to us today. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Sonia Poulton.
They were talking about the new report that a generation of children will fail at school and in exams as a consequence of lockdown. Susanna said, I feel we failed our children. And the others nodded in unison. But no, wait a minute, Susanna. We did not fail our children. We, i.e. people like me, we campaigned and protested. We petitioned, we shouted, we podcasted, we made endless social media posts, and we said very, very loudly and repeatedly that we are deeply, deeply concerned with the lockdown measures being applied to everyone, including children. And you, Miss Reid, and the rest of Legacy Media just kept ramping up the pressure day in and day out.
Sonia Poulton
on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A new report has suggested that the UK's military support for Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza was pre-planned. planned. Now, here to talk about this is Lee Slaughter, who is a political commentator and analyst. And we will just discuss how deeply entrenched are the UK in the atrocities that are happening in Gaza at the moment. Anyway, Lee, welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. Glad to be here.
Lee, yeah, really good to have you on the show. And you've been looking into this and this report, that I think it was in declassified outlet about military agreements and different agreements that the UK has made with Israel over the last 3 or 4 years that I didn't know about. Most people don't know about. It hasn't been mentioned in the mainstream media, but yet they exist anyway. I mean, can you tell us what has been going on there in terms of, you know, these secret agreements and this rapport between the UK government and the Netanyahu government in Israel?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, David, that's multi-layered and multilateral. And it's not just with Israel, it's with Ukraine and Russia as well. All of these things are linked. And what we're seeing today is a transition of authority rather than power from the elected to the unelected. You know, the people that are signing these agreements and making these agreements between governments are not coming up with these ideas themselves. They've been handed down. This is a management class. But what we've seen with Israel in particular, and the UK in particular, is this original 2020, the secret military agreement signed by Ben Wallace, the then defense minister. And we've transitioned through that into another report. And now we're into this new accord with Israel, where British fighter planes based in Cyprus, Nakhitiri, were involved in the so-called defense of Israel from the Iranian drone attack. I mean, that's never been discussed in Parliament. That's never been discussed anywhere other than within this agreement. And these agreements are secret and nobody is aware of them. And to the point that the media is not aware of, or certainly not reporting on, the mainstream media. So it's down to people like ourselves in the alternative media to actually handle what's going on. And again, from my point of view, this is not an isolated incident in terms of the UK and Israel. We know that there are similar agreements between the United States and Israel. We know that there is a huge Israeli lobby in Parliament and in Congress and across the EU as well. So there are broader questions to ask than these specific agreements. I think within the UK and within Westminster, there has to be some kind. This needs to be raised in Westminster and it needs to be debated about what are these agreements? What do they entail? What commitments has Britain made? Because if you then extrapolate this to the next level, and we go back to Brexit in 2016 with the withdrawal of the UK eventually in 2020 from the European Union, now there's talk of the UK having closer ties with the EU based on security arrangements. Now, Britain's still in PESCO, which is the Permanent European Security Arrangements, I think. So we're already made, have those military commitments, and they're talking about broadening that support of Europe from the UK, broadening that out to include other areas of the economy. So you can see there's a direction of travel, both with these Israeli agreements between the UK and Israel on defence, and then re-engaging with the EU at another level, and then look at the wholesale condemnation of Russia and the attacks over the Ukraine incident. And for the Ukraine incident, you have to go back to 2014 with Victoria Nuland. And how did the circumstances get put in place for that? So you can't look at the agreements between the UK and Israel in isolation. We do need to know what's in those agreements and we do need to discuss them, and it needs to be done at a parliamentary level. But we also need to step back and look at where all the other dots are that are related to this on the pitch.
So, I mean, who is in charge here? Because, you know, obviously we know that the US has just recently approved $61 billion of aid to Ukraine, $26 billion of military aid to Israel. I mean, that was Congress just pushed that through last week. And they just seem, well, they're just going with the flow. They're told to do this, and then they're all waving Ukrainian flags on the floor of the House of Representatives. But you know, there's a lot of analysis into congressmen in the US that they are bought and paid for by these big political action conferences, IPAC, the American Israel PAC. They give a lot of funding to individual candidates, so we can see that. But how is it done in the UK?
Well, it's slightly differently, it's slightly smaller numbers. But you know, UK politicians are forever visiting Israel with the Conservative or the Labour or the Liberal Democrat friends of Israel groups. Those are very powerful lobbies in Westminster. And they are lobbies that nobody really knows or understands what the lobby is saying, because it's done privately and individually. But you look at the voting of Westminster in particular, but the EU, you look at Germany and France with their unequivocal support of Israel in what is, by the United Nations definition, war crimes and a crime against humanity, genocide. And the British government in particular, we've not criticized South Africa directly for bringing this to the ICJ, but we have said that it's unreasonable and soft words like that in terms of, you know, and there's no case to answer. Well, there's clearly a case to answer, because if the Russians were doing this in Ukraine, everybody and their dog would be jumping up and down about Putin being arrested. They've already said that previously. So the level of double standards, the level of hypocrisy that the Western politicians are demonstrating, again, across the piece, this is not just the UK and Israel. This is about the United States and Israel. This is about the United States and NATO and Russia. This is about the whole managerial class trying to force through the policies and rules that they want and to create this new world order. And you look at the furore with Elon Musk now, with Twitter, and you know the fact that Australian politicians are demanding that he be arrested, Brazilian politicians are demanding that he be arrested, purely for allowing people to have free speech across the X platform. So you can see this, and then look at the coordination and the language, everything from COVID, Build Back Better, COVID messaging, the New World Order messaging, the messaging now on Ukraine and on Gaza. You have to look at this and then put all of those dots on the big board and look at where they're connected, where the intersections are, who is saying what to who and where and when. And then you get to these agreements, these political military cooperation agreements that sit behind all of that. And then you need to say, okay, so where do these policies come from? So these policies come from the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. And they go through a series of phases where Klaus Schwab or Meadows speaks, and they're turned into policy documents through the people like the Royal Institute for International Affairs or the Trilateral Commission. Those policy documents then are pushed through, research papers are pushed through into policy documents. Policy documents through these pressure groups are then handed to politicians. Yeah. They craft these policies. And so we have
I totally agree. We have to look at those, and we'll come back after this quick news break and we'll talk about that in more detail. Thank you, Lee. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
I have huge news.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah! Do it!
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. Hardline Israeli ministers have slammed a new ceasefire proposal put forward by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Former US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has snapped during a live television interview after the host corrected her claims about Donald Trump. Hunter Biden is preparing to sue Fox News, and a review of White House transcript has found staff have had to correct President Biden's public remarks 148 times over the past 4 months.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Western politicians and governments are giving huge amounts of money to Ukraine and Israel in their respective wars on Russia and Gaza. And here discussing that with me on the show today is Lee Slaughter. Welcome back, Lee. You're just mentioning about the Council of Foreign Relations and other bodies that sit above government that seem to create the policy documents which they give to governments, and they just like take them, read them and implement and do what they say. Which, to me, that seems a complete subversion of democracy. But is this really going on?
It is a subversion of democracy, and yes, it is going on, and it's been going on for a long time. You only have to look at the language that's used in these documents and then the commonality of the language used by the politicians around the world. And COVID is a brilliant example of this, where the messaging was the same, a Build Back Better was the same, the all of the policy papers that came out were came out in a period of time, which were relatively same. And then you look at the language within the documents. And these internet free speech laws that are coming through, they're clearly written by the same group. And then we'll do a tweak here for Australia, and we'll do a tweak there for the UK, and we'll do a tweak there for Ireland. And you can see the commonality between these things is so stark that, you know, it can't be ignored. And so therefore, you have to ask, where was the origination of this document? Where was the origination of these laws? And if you follow that line up, you're coming through to people like the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. And if you follow up through them, you get into the World Economic Forum, and you get into the United Nations Agenda for the 21st century, of which we're in Agenda 2030. And then you look at where does some of the thought processes come from? That takes you to the Club of Rome, and Dennis Meadows, I think his name is, and others. And so who sits above them? And you start to see the banks, the big banks, I'm talking the central banks. And then you look at where do they all reside? And they all reside in Geneva, in Switzerland, along with Gavi, along with the Bank for International Settlements. And so there is a power pyramid that is clearly very clear to see now, very transparent if you're looking. And then when you look at where are the politicians on that, the politicians are just below the public, or just above the public, rather, just below all of the just mentioned there. And so this brings us back to the Israel-UK military agreements that are secret and we don't know about. So then we would have to then look from the agreements with the UK and Israel to the agreements with the US and Israel, and then look at some of the loyalties of the MPs and the senators and congressmen and members of the European Parliament, who are equally vociferous in their support of Israel and their denial of genocide. And you can't look at anything these days in isolation. You have to look at cause and effect. Where does it come from? What's it connected to? How is it interrelated to other aspects of the economy? And that brings us to, you know, the economy itself, where you have now artificially created energy crises around the world. Now, in the UK, we know it's artificial because prices have gone up, margins have gone up, and profits have gone up. The only people losing are the consumer of energy. The only people that are gaining are governments and the banks, and obviously the corporations themselves, all posting record profits. So we know that this so-called energy crisis, and therefore the inflationary spiral that is affecting everybody else, is not real. It's artificial, it's manufactured. So you see, again, all of these things are related. All of these things are about changing the economy and putting pressure on individuals to accept the policies and rules that are coming out of government. Again, this brings us back to the Israeli-UK trade military agreements that we're talking about now specifically, but that you cannot look at things in isolation. You have to look at them, everything in the round. And this then goes to the debt levels that have been inflicted upon Western nations as well. And where do they come from? What is the end game for that? And that's an entire, we could talk for hours on that one.
Yeah. But it seems to me that these people, though, they do still put a huge amount of effort into getting their people into parliaments, whether it's in the UK, the USA, and, you know, to a lesser extent around the world, obviously Germany, France, the EU as well. And they wouldn't bother doing that if there wasn't some power in that. They need people at that level in order to make the decisions to funnel money to Ukraine, to Israel, to Big Pharma, to the COVID vaccines, to the banks, to BlackRock and whatever. I mean, is there, do they still have some autonomy, or is it possible? You know, obviously I'm thinking myself as the leader of a party that is outside of this whole system, you know, I'm against everything that you've mentioned. You know, when I want to get candidates in local councils, in parliament, is it possible to take back our system and start doing the right thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. If you're big enough to stand up and recognize what the problem is. And the problem is a thing called the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders Program, of which in the UK, Rishi Sunak, Jeremy Hunt, James Cleverly, Penny Mordaunt, Grant Shapps, more than half the cabinet. And then you get into Trudeau in Canada, Trudeau and most of his cabinet, young global leaders. And you get to Australia and you get to New Zealand with Ardern, a young global leader, rewarded for what she did in New Zealand with the lockdowns and the removal of people's powers, freedoms. She was rewarded with a big job in the UN. So you look at, and then you look at Tony Blair, one of the originators of all of this in the UK. He wasn't an originator. He was a trigger man. He pulled the trigger on a lot of this stuff and create. And he was rewarded with the Tony Blair Foundation or whatever it's called. And he's now allegedly worth 380 to 500 million pounds, depending on which report you read. That's the level of corruption in politics. And it's and you look at the people that are selected to stand for these parties. They're all selected based on how pliable. And so, is it possible? Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's a great thought. That is a fantastic and positive thought to leave it on. And I know all the people you've mentioned there. I mean, I have nothing but disdain for these people who are allegiant, not to the people of their own country, but to the global power brokers in the World Economic Forum. They should not be in positions of power in this country, using our wealth and our talents in order to feed this beast system, which is turning everything upside down and inverting things the wrong way up. We need to get in there and turn things the right way up again. And I'm glad that you've come on to talk about that. Anyway, we're at the end of our time here, Lee, but where can people find out more about what you've written about and your work?
You can find us on The Real Truth 502 on Patreon, or you can find us on thefrontline.army on Rumble.
Fantastic. Lee, thank you for joining me today on today's News Talk TNT.
My pleasure.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57 and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete. But it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
One scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
I'm relying on luck. But who knows if it'll be on my side?
When it comes to disasters and emergencies, it's not a matter of if, but when. Take control. 1. Assess your needs. 2. Make a plan. 3. Engage your support network. Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell.
Focused on the facts. David Curtin on today's News Talk. TNT.
Well, lots of you have responded very much and very positively to Lee Slaughter, who was just on, talking about how everything was interrelated, Israel, Ukraine, COVID, the banks, the World Economic Forum, and all of those things. So Hidden Truth, thank you for writing in. You said Lee Slaughter, Warren Thornton, Lee Dawson are all absolutely fantastic part of the frontline army, and Lee Dawson with Paul McGuinness on health. You've spoken to Paul on the phone a few times, and you said please contact them about HGH gel and patches. I don't know what HGH gel is. That's a new thing to me, but I'm sure some of you tell me what that is as we go through. Educate me. I get educated as well on this show by my guests and by you. Thank you so much. Annie H says, I had two really good conversations with him. His wife is a teacher and the other is well-formed about the deliberate wars going on. Hopefully they'll be spreading the word about fluoride. And TNT, you wear the baseball cap. Well, that's great. I hope people notice you in the baseball cap. And also fluoride, very important issue Obviously, I'm against putting fluoride in the water artificially. That's really not good for human health. But there we go. Now, on the show with me now is Nicholas Martin, who is an activist, I think leader of Aches. I don't know how you actually say that. Aches, an adult aches, adult child health and environmental support. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Good morning, I should say. Yes, yeah, almost getting the time zone right.
Really good to have you on the show. Are you in the UK or are you in another part of the world at the moment?
No, I am in the UK, but some of the correspondents talked about different time zones, so I'm definitely in the UK.
That's right. Well, there's people watching us all over the world, so you know you're going international now. But so how do you say? Is it aches? You say, is that
aches,
how you say?
Yeah.
Aches.
Yeah.
And that is what some people get from 5G, which is what you spend some time talking about. So tell us a bit about your background, because I believe you worked in telecommunications or something, and then you got into speaking about 5G. How did that all come about?
Yeah, I did a degree in economics and then worked in large packaging companies, subsidiaries of Unilever and Smurfit. And then I became a director of a small company. And when my wife put in Wi-Fi in our house, she got very, very badly affected by it. And I had to take her to a hospital at 1 o'clock in the morning, and she had to have cortisone and what was the other thing? Cortisone and something else, morphine, to dull the pain. And then I researched it and discovered that certain people are very sensitive to Wi-Fi, which is microwave and radiation in air. And we got rid of Wi-Fi, and I'm talking to you on a wired system, which has very good download speeds. And she's perfectly okay now. We got rid of that technology. Now, that made me realize that I should do my best to inform other people, and that got me involved in the details of 5G. And the fundamental difference with 5G, it's a different technology from 4G or microwave radiation in general, like Wi-Fi and smart meters. 5G is the collimation of a signal into beam-formed waves. And those waves are necessary for the World Economic Forum agenda to remotely monitor and control humanity. And once people understand that, they will demand the removal of 5G. And we had an event recently in London to give information out to the public, which the BBC and the mainstream media won't do. And congratulations to your program and what you do on TNT Radio, which I think is a great asset to human consciousness.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, everything which is a threat to human health and wholesomeness, I want to talk about and make people aware. And you're doing a fantastic job as well. I mean, you said you had the conference in London, which I think was very successful. But that is what, 5G is sold to us and promoted to us as something that's going to give us faster download streams. You'll be driving along in your car or on the train, and then you can watch Netflix faster and so on. But I mean, I really don't think that anyone needs any more streaming. That's not the real purpose of it. As you say, there are this beam technology that sounds frightening, because does that mean that there will be a much higher intensity energy coming at you without you even realizing it?
Yes. You see, the fundamental thing is the government, locally and nationally, will tell you that don't worry, you're ahead about these things. Everything is perfectly safe because of ICNIRP, which is the International Commission of Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection Guidance. And guidance from ICNIRP is about thermal effects, that's heating effects. But there is a patent application from Swisscom, which is a leading Swiss telecom company, and they point out that 5G technology causes chromosome damage, DNA damage, and increases cancer risk. Now, if that's the telecom industry telling us the facts, then it's very important that we get these facts out to people. And in that patent application from Swisscom, it says these effects are non-thermal, whereas ICHNA, which is the guidance the government relies on, is a thermal metric. And that's really what we have to get over to people. And in many ways, people don't realize that the streetlights, which have been put up all over the UK, you know, these LED streetlights,
yeah,
save the world from global warming. Inside those lighting heads is a 5G antenna. And those 5G antennas scan the street, pick up disturbances in the field. In other words, it's like if you walk around in a ping pong full room, you create those ping pong balls to be disturbed as you move around. Now, a street with a lot of 5G antennas in the streetlights will create a field. When you move around in your house, you will create a disturbance in the microwave field, which can be digitized and backhauled through the beam waves to an AI computer so they can listen to you and see you. And it's very similar with these ULEZ cameras, which have dual functions. One is infrared technology, which we know is used to do facial recognition, and the other is a microwave technology. So it's dual band technology. And it's very important that people are informed about this technology, because pernicious technology should be removed. And that's what AICS is trying to do, to tell people the reality of what is going on in our society, exactly what is not told to them by the mass media. And as I say, it's thanks to you and your program that we can communicate the facts of all this. And I would say that I'm not really an activist. I'm vice chairman of a local parish council, and I am still a director of a company. So I'm very much in the mainstream of British democratic life. And I'm trying to do the opposite of what Klaus Schwab does in the World Economic Forum. He infiltrates his people into government. And I hope to do the reverse, to in local government, to tell the truth at all levels and to uphold the Nolan principles. And you yourself, as a former GLA councillor, will know the Nolan principles of integrity, honesty, and openness in government. And so I'm doing my level best, albeit on a small way, to try to do that, as I'm sure you did when you were in the GLA.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, now, obviously, I run the Heritage Party, and we've got some people in the same position as you. We've got 11 parish and town councillors around the country. We want to have more. We're standing candidates in the local elections this year. And it's vital to get into councils, because they make the decisions whether to put up or not to put up a 5G tower next to your home or on your school or your kid's school or near a hospital and so on. And, you know, it seems, you know, we've had other people on the show to discuss this. Someone, you know, Laura Hurley, I think she's one of our candidates in Southend. She came on a few weeks ago to talk about this. And it seems that councils are just, you know, giving permission for these to go up without hardly any scrutiny or thought whatsoever. It's just someone makes a, you know, say, we want to put a tower there. The council says, yeah, okay, you can do it tomorrow. And then before somebody knows, they've got a big 5G antenna outside their home with no notice, no consultation, and no proper safety checks. I mean, I think this is absolutely appalling. I mean, is there anything we can do about this?
Well, I think that awareness is very important. And I mean, look at Prince Andrew. The awareness of public opinion that he was connected with Epstein and Maxwell means that he's been removed from public office. Now, once we make people aware of what's been going on, for example, as Lara mentioned, many local authorities have been giving planning permission for these 5G masts on the basis of an ICHNA certificate to protect public health. But that certificate is from a company that doesn't exist. Now, we've asked the police to investigate into this, and they don't seem to be willing to do so. So it's very important that the public are made aware of this sort of situation. Just like you did in the GLA, when you drew attention to the question you made in the assembly about the way the mayor is elected with his Smartmatic software.
Yeah.
And we know currently, as we speak, there are court cases going on in America, particularly in Maricopa County, Arizona, where Mark Fincham is involved, I think, in where the judge is now beginning to investigate into the reliability of this software. I don't know whether we could get the same inquiry in relation to the GLA election process. What do you think?
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because, I mean, that without me realizing, that's one of the great success stories I've had, because I was the first person to draw attention to that they were using this Smartmatic software in the London election count last year. I went to the count and it was just like no count I've seen before. You couldn't check the papers. They were going through the machines 20 a second. There was no way you could actually check them properly. You know, they could have cheated, you know, without you even realizing. But this year they're using paper. They've gone back to paper counting. Oh. So there's not electronic counting anymore. It's paper.
Yeah.
So rather than having three big centers, they're going back to having 14 centers, and some of them will be in the same place. So there's 9 locations, and they're going to be counted by hand, I think, as far as I am aware. As far as I know, that's what they're doing. So I've got to check that more. But if that is the case, then that is a really good thing.
Yeah.
So just by raising awareness, you can change you can change the way things are done.
Yes.
But with this 5G, I mean, the thing is, you know, the powers that be use the same old tactic. You talk about it and then they say, you're a conspiracy theorist. I mean, you know, which is nonsense, because, I mean, but you've mentioned, you know, you're talking about Swisscom, which is a reputable mainstream corporation. And they're saying this. So I mean, if we point to this, then obviously we can't be accused of being a conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely. And AICS, which is designed to try and get this information over to the public through events and through activities with local government, is going to start a new approach, which is to request whether the local authorities have conducted environmental impact assessments. Now, that is a requirement under local planning law, and I haven't seen any environmental impact assessment for a 5G MIMO mast, or for the ULEZ cameras, or for the MIMO masts, the streetlights, the MIMO, or the ULEZ cameras. I haven't seen a comprehensive, detailed environmental impact assessment going into the nature of the radiation involved from any of that type of apparatus. And I think what we can do is focus into these requirements to do environmental impact assessments to expose that many masts have been given planning permission on the basis of certificates from companies which don't exist, and those certificates are required and they're supposed to prove that the technology is safe. And in one case in Bedford, not only was the certificate from a company that doesn't exist, but the applicant itself, the planning applicant itself, was from a company that doesn't exist. Now, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? Absolutely unbelievable.
They're taking the mick, really.
Exactly.
that really is astounding. You know, I'm surprised that you don't have people in the mainstream media taking this up, because, I mean, this would be a scandal. I mean, you used to have investigative journalists work for, you know, I don't sort of hold the papers that they work for in high esteem anymore, but you used to have these people who would look into this and then they would make a big expose, but it seems that they're not interested anymore. And it's quite disturbing. You say the police are not particularly interested, because, you know, if this is something that's going on, they're putting all these things up with fraudulent, bogus safety certificates. I mean, that is fraud. Surely the police would be interested in that.
Well, I mean, you raised an excellent point, because it was consultation with a retired police inspector who raised the fact that this is the use of a false instrument under the 1981 Forgery and Counterfeiting Act, that prompted me to write to the originally to the Police and Crimes Commissioner, then to the Chief Constable, and now I've reported it to the Independent Office of Police Conduct for them to investigate why the police are not investigating this situation. Yeah. After all, they're the only body that can effectively inquire into this, can research into this, and they don't seem to be willing to. So all of this needs to be given out to the public, you know, the nature of our, what is actually going on in our democracy. And that's why on the AICS website, we have this phrase, is our democracy real or is it an illusion? Because these things should not be going on.
Yeah, right. I totally agree. Look, Nicholas, we're nearly at the end of the show, but just quickly, where can people find out more about AICS?
Our website is an unusual one. It's called www.aichs.international. So it's not .com, it's .international. And there they can read about what we're doing. They can see the letters to the local authorities, the letters to the police, and
absolutely. Fantastic. Well, Nicholas, you're doing great work, and thank you so much for joining me on the show today to talking about AICS and the dangers of 5G safety. Thank you so much. Now, next up on today's news talk, we have Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn. So stay watching us. He will have some great guests on. Catherine McBride, our very own political editor, Basil Valentine, Nick Buckley, who is standing to be Mayor of Greater Manchester, and Dr. Kat Lindley. I'll be back tomorrow again at 10 o'clock. Stay with us. This is today's news talk, TNT.